years, why don't you give me a 10-year contract? But I don't know when it was, at the end of a number of years, was it after 20 years, I think they no longer took a bonus to my contract. They just assumed that I was going to be there, and they gave me a lovely tribute. The members of the congregation gave me a lovely tribute in 1950 when I was in the congregation for 20 years. And in 1955, under the chairmanship of a very good friend, Harry Rubinstein, they gave me some kind of an affair and a munificent monetary gift that enabled me to go in style to Israel. This was my second visit to that part of the world. My wife and I went there. We had a great time. We toured Israel for at least a month, and we also went to other parts of the continent, many countries. It was in real luxury style, and I'm indebted to the congregations. And they did it of their own free will. I never asked for anything like that.
No, that's just marvelous. Well, when the war came, what action did you take, World War II?
Before I go on to World War II, there were other individuals that I ought to mention. I've just mentioned Harry Rubinstein, a president of the congregation. I should mention an old member, George Wintner, who was our financial secretary and who kept an eye upon the budget. I don't know what the budget was in those early years. I doubt whether it was more than $20,000 the first year that I came there. Could have gone up to $25,000, but he kept a jealous eye upon that budget. There were others whom I should remember as being effective presidents. Philip Cohn served as president of the congregation upon two different occasions. Very good, very interested. And H. Albert Young and Harry Rubinstein as well. Well, when the war came along, the members of the Rabbinical Assembly had a meeting. Now, clergymen are not required to go into the service, but they have to volunteer their services. Now, interestingly enough, non-Jewish clergymen volunteered very willingly. And the reason was obvious, because their salary from the army was considerably larger than the salary that they were getting from their pulpits. There wasn't that problem with respect to... there was a certain kind of a problem, I guess, with respect to enlisting rabbis into the service. We had an assembly of all the members of the Rabbinical Assembly, and we voted unanimously that all of us as a unit would render service to the army. We volunteered. Well, I had a child, and it was, I think, at the end of 1942 or the beginning of 1943 that I received a call to enter the service. And how old was I then? I was approaching 40 years of age, and when the call came, of course, I accepted. And I wouldn't let anything interfere with my serving in the army. Just turn that off. I had a physical examination, by the way. I was called up, and I had a physical examination, and the doctor said, "I'm fine." He said, "Of course, there is a little bit of trouble with your eyes." I said, "Well, there's no problem about my eyes." because I'll just say that I want to serve, and so I'll serve. He said, well, if you want to do that, you can, although the government would excuse you because of your eyesight. I said, serving my country, particularly at this time and for this cause, means so much to me that I would never, never think of using anything, as legitimate as they may be, to not to enter the service. So, having signed the necessary form, I eventually was accepted for service in the Army. Now, I served beginning with November the 6th, 1943. That's when I was called up. Now, I think it was of September of that year, but I didn't have to go into the service until November the 6th when I was called up to go to the chaplaincy school, which interestingly enough was at Harvard, because I'm a graduate of Harvard College. And my official service began November the 6th, 1943.
Did your family join you?
No, my family, well, they did join me at MacDill Field. I served from November the 6th, 43, until the end of August, or the beginning of September, 1946. So it was shy by a couple of months of 3 years. Half of my service was in Florida, MacDill Field, and half of my service was overseas. Now, my family did join me for a summer. I think it was in the summer of 1944. But let me tell you about what the congregation did for me. I don't know what I was receiving then in salary. I'm not sure. I might have been receiving $4,500. I'm not quite sure. But I think that the emolument that I was getting from the service was a little bit less. And Irwin Budner, who was that time on the board, and who was slated to become a president of the congregation, took me aside and he said, "Rabbi, we're very, very proud of you that you're going into the service, even though you have a wife and a child, and you're volunteering your service, and the congregation will not forget it, and we'll see to it that if there is any differential, that is to say that you're receiving less from the Army than what you see from the congregation, we'll make sure to pay that differential. We'll make sure to pay that differential." That was very, very nice. I might say that I didn't ask for it, I didn't request it, but he was kind enough as to make that offer. And then it was in the fall of 1944, that was at the time when the Germans were trying that blitz, as you may some may remember, in Western Europe, was on, that I was called to go overseas. And I was glad to go. I don't remember when it was that I was called to the staging area. It might have been in February of 1945, say, that I was called to the staging area. I'm trying to remember the place, but that doesn't make any difference, see. And I sent my wife and my daughter home a little bit previous to that, I don't remember how old my Ruthie was at that time. She was only a couple of years of age. And we prepared ourselves to go. Somehow or other, it took us a little bit of time to leave the staging area. And it wasn't until about Passover time that we went overseas. We were on board ship, I think it was called, it was the Constitution, I'm not sure. And we had a zigzag path in going across, because even then there was still, there were mines there. And I think there was a little bit of danger from some submarines.
Yeah,
submarines as well. There was then, so we followed the zigzag path. And I can't help tell of this interesting incident. Naturally, they didn't have Passover meals. They didn't have kosher meals, by the way, for the army personnel. But a colleague of mine, Rabbi Bernard Ziskin, had prepared himself with meat, with kosher meat and with Passover meat, salami and things like that. So we had meat, and we observed the spirit of Passover and the spirit of the dietary laws by, during the week of Pesach, just having vegetables. And we had, I think, some matzah, so we wouldn't eat any bread, and so we observed it. I'll never forget that a Christian colleague of mine, a Congregationalist, I believe, would always walk in the food lane, or the food line, the chow line, right behind me. Why? Because he would get the benefit of the food that I wouldn't eat, the meat and other things there. And it was a festive and gala occasion for him.
Were there many Jews aboard
that ship?
That ship, I mean, your duties...
I don't remember whether we had any duties aboard ship. I don't remember how many days it took. It took us a little bit longer. It might have taken us around 10 days, and we landed in Naples.
And then what were your duties in Naples?
Well, in Naples, I was being reassigned. We were there in Naples. We landed in Naples.